the phone with me right now is Little Willie G. Hey, thanks for joining me here at KVMR-FM.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
So let's talk about the very beginnings of Little Willie G. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I was actually born on 43rd Street, neighborhood that became known as 38th Street.
And did you live there then for quite a long time, or how did that work?
I lived there pretty much all my young life. Went to school on 34th and Central, a Catholic school called St. Patrick's. Got a good work ethic from my parents and my brothers and I and my cousins. We shined shoes, sold newspapers, so that we could afford to buy some records at Dolphins of Hollywood.
Well, now there you go. Dolphins of Hollywood. Talk about a landmark.
Yeah.
So what was it that got you interested in music, and who were some of your really early influences?
Well, music was all around us. My parents really enjoyed music, and I guess growing up, radio was really the big thing. So we heard a lot of radio, listened to a lot of radio at home. Then my oldest brother, Frank, he actually was a musician. He played guitar and had a little trio in high school. And he's the one that pretty much pulled me into the room one day and just started nurturing my ability to sing. I didn't even know it was that, you know, I had it. But he really helped me nurture it. And I started looking forward to getting home right after school every day so I could sit with him for an hour or two and just learn some things.
So when you were listening to the radio, what were you listening to, like Jesse Belvin and those
actually,
guys?
Actually, not right at the beginning. My dad would tune in. I remember these call letters, KRKD, and they played everything from country and western to big band swing, and eventually started getting into the rhythm and blues. And I think Louis Jordan, Count Basie Orchestra, and then eventually I started hearing guys like Big Joe Turner on the radio. Then television also was in its infancy there in the early 50s. I remember these black and white images off of it looked like a 7-inch screen. It was probably a little larger than that, but the Make-Believe Ballroom, Al Jarvis, Spade Cooley.
Wow.
Yeah, this was, I mean, it was just really, really cool. And so I remember those shows really, really distinctly. Jesse Belvin, actually, before he became, you know, known for his solo work on Goodnight, My Love and what have you, sang with a group called The Clicks. And The Clicks, actually, it's interesting. There was like four different groups, Don Julian and the Meadowlarks, Richard Berry and Tony Allen, and then, of course, Jesse Belvin and The Clicks. But they were all really the same band. And they used to rehearse just a couple of blocks from us. And as a young kid, I remember going over there and shining their shoes just so I could listen to them rehearse. It was quite an education.
Wow, yeah. To The Clicks with Jesse Belvin, I'm thinking of, like, Girl of My Dreams.
Girl of My Dreams, Beware.
Yeah.
Yeah, some good stuff. Oh, The Shields as well.
Oh, the group that did You Cheated.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That was the other one I was thinking of.
So let's fast forward a little bit here, and how was it that you got into the Midnighters?
Well, once again, my brother started taking me around with him when they would do, you know, backyard parties and wedding receptions and whatnot. And I remember he took me to a gig one time, and there was a young man, Johnny Gamboa and the Crowns. And this was probably, man, just like one of the best bands at the time, besides the Sportsmen, that were local groups. My brother knew Johnny pretty well, and so he asked him if Johnny would let me sing. And he says, my brother knows what key he sings in and knows the changes if you guys need to know anything. And Johnny kind of laughed, but he actually gave me an opportunity. It turned out that Johnny was going to Salesian High School. And when I eventually went to high school there at Salesian, we got reacquainted. And it was there that I met Romeo Prado, Benny Lopez, Joe Farfan, Jimmy Espinoza, Ronnie Figueroa. And most of these guys were playing with Johnny and the Crowns at the time. And I just used to hang around with them. Salesian had probably the best music department in Southern California at the time. Just a great, not only, you know, marching band stuff for the sporting events, but Dixieland and jazz. I mean, Bill Taggart, who was the teacher, this guy really just gave us an opportunity to taste a little bit of everything. every genre with the school band, which was really cool. It put us leagues above some of the other school bands in the area. And it was through that that the Midnighters were formed. We didn't call ourselves the Midnighters at the beginning. The guys that actually had the band were Benny Ceballos, Richard Ceballos, and their cousin Raul Ceballos, and we called ourselves the Gentiles.
I'll be darned.
And that was the beginning of it. And eventually, as we started playing around the neighborhood, doing Battle of the Bands and those type of things, and getting into choreography and dressing up, the Gentiles just didn't have the pizzazz that the Romancers or the Premiers,
yep,
you know,
yep,
or the Spats even. So we changed our name to Benny and the Midnighters.
And then eventually evolved into the Midnighters.
Into the Midnighters.
Did you have any qualms or thoughts about the fact that there had been a The Midnighters with Hank Ballard, or did that even play
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was one of my favorite bands at the time. And we just really liked the name. And so what we did to avoid confusion, we just changed the spelling to T-H-E-E-M-I-D-N-I-T-E-R-S. And used it like that. We liked it, and we used it, and it worked for us.
What was the first record that you made?
The first record that we made was recorded live at East L.A. College at one of the high school-sponsored rock and roll shows, and it was Land of a Thousand Dances, the Chris Kenner and Fats Domino song.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting the way it came into our catalog was it wasn't uncommon for bands to back up vocal groups. And one of the vocal groups that we worked with pretty consistently during our high school years was Cannibal and the Headhunters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually Cannibal who brought the song to the band. They were doing it, and a few other songs, too. And we happened to record it that night, October 17th of 1964, because they got stuck in the fog coming from Fresno, and they never made it back to the gig in East L.A. So we took the stage, we did our set, and Professor Bill Taggart was yelling from the wings, "Keep going, they're not here yet, keep playing." And the only other songs that we felt were respectable enough to play were the songs that we had rehearsed with them. So we did them. And consequently, both songs traveled up the charts.
Right, and so that pretty much confirms that you recorded it first.
Yeah, we recorded it first, and Cannibal and the Headhunters, they had already tracked the rhythm section, but they hadn't put the vocals on it.
Mm.
We used to kind of crack up about it as well. We used to say, you know, if this hadn't happened, probably neither song would have had very much success, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It might have been marginal, but our fans really got behind it, calling the radio stations and requesting it. And so it turned into a real healthy competitive edge for us, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that was recorded on Chattahoochee Records, and I think that was also on the Whittier label, too.
Right. Originally, we recorded on Chattahoochee, and then they kind of just sort of started going belly up a little bit, I guess the economy and whatnot of the industry at the time, and we were fortunate enough to just use some wisdom, and we said, well, let's just create our own record company, Whittier Records. And so we eventually bought all our masters back from Chattahoochee, our singles. Weren't very many at the time, but the first album, and I'd say maybe three singles, maybe,
mm-hmm,
which would be six other songs. And we bought those back, and we created Whittier Records and enjoyed quite a bit of success there for about 10 years.
Well, that was a smart move.
Yeah, and we still, today, we own all our masters and have re-released several things. One with Thump Records, distributed through Universal, called The Midnighters Greatest.
Mm-hmm.
And then a small indie label out of New York called Norton Records. We just recently released 19 of our rock songs, just up-tempo rockers, called In the Midnight Hour.
Norton is a well-respected label.
Yeah.
Not only do they do a good job with the packaging, but they've got great liner notes as well. So it's a great company to have do your work.
Dominic Fiore did the liner notes for us on this, and he did a great job. Great research.
Some of your other records, when I say Sad Girl, what do you think of first?
Well, just I think of Jay Wiggins, who had recorded it and picked it up at Dolphins, 45. And just brought it to the band, and there was a sad girl in every neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's like, the seven dwarfs existed in the neighborhoods we grew up in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was a sleepy, there was a dopey.
Tell me about Jump, Jive, and Harmonize.
Oh, man. Let's see, we recorded that about 1967, I believe. Recorded live at the Jewel Theater, where we used to rehearse. We were just experimenting with feelings and tempos. It was a term I actually used to use from the stage. I used to say something along the lines of, hey, it's good to be alive here with you tonight, and we're the Midnighters band, and we're just going to jump, jive, and harmonize till they throw us out. Something like that. So the song actually was birthed from that little sentence that we used to use at gigs. And George Dominguez came up with a killer guitar lick on it. You know? And we probably wrote the song. It's not even 3 minutes long, but we probably wrote it and all of that, you know.
Mm. Tell me, who were the other Midnighters besides yourself?
Sure. Danny Lamont on drums. Roy Marquez, rhythm guitar. George Dominguez, lead guitar. Jimmy Espinoza on bass. Ronnie Figueroa on keyboards. Romeo Prado, trombone. Larry Rendon, tenor saxophone. And myself on lead vocals.
One of the neat things I think about the Midnighters was that you pretty much were a self-contained band with a great horn section. I don't know that you would have been the first, but certainly one of the early bands like that.
Yeah, I think we were certainly not the first, but I think we were one of the first bands to just incorporate the valve trombone and the tenor saxophone. Romeo, who recently passed away, it'll be a year on the 25th of March that Romeo passed away from cancer. He was the architect, I believe, of our sound, our arrangements. He really worked hard at, getting us to really rise to another level of playing and composing.
One of your later singles, I don't think it was the last one, but certainly a later one, was Chicano Power.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me something about that one.
Yeah, that was Romeo's composition. It's something he wrote while he was in the military, actually, about 1965, 1966. While he was in the military, he was stationed in San Antonio, Texas, and he had gotten influenced by Little Joey La Familia, the Latin breed. He was just hearing these great bands there in San Antonio. And, of course, the political awareness and things that were happening here in East Los Angeles pretty much prompted the title of it. He said that wasn't his first title for the song, but when we eventually got into the studio to record it, I guess it was an overall consensus that Chicano Power would be a good title of it.
Mm.
And I think Romeo, just his writing skills from the first album, from the first time we started recording, just evolved over the years. And it was interesting to note those that paid homage to him at his memorial service, his contemporaries, put him right in there with Quincy Jones, Billy Strayhorn, and Marty Page.
That's some good company.
Man, I'm telling you, we couldn't help but agree.
So you pretty much finished off the run of your singles. You had one for You and I think you went on to a group called Malo.
Yes, uh-huh.
At some point there, I think, in the 70s, then you probably stopped recording, but what'd you do from there?
Actually, I continued recording after I left the Midnighters. I recorded for Gordo Records, which was a subsidiary of Faro.
Okay.
Faro Records. And that was owned by Eddie Davis.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy that produced the Premieres and the Blendells and Cannibal and the Headhunters. And I recorded some singles. One was called Brown Baby, a really beautiful song. Lonely Lullaby, which was a movie theme. From that, we parlayed that into a contract with Uni Records. And I had a group called God's Children that Little Ray, another great singer from East L.A., we put together this group called God's Children. And we did the television theme for Matt Lincoln.
Mm.
It was a series on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
And that song was called Hey, Does Somebody Care? And we recorded also That's the Way God Planned It, the Billy Preston.
Oh, okay, right, right.
He did that on the concert for Bangladesh. And there was another song we did. Paul Anka cover of Put Your Head on My Shoulder.
That's a great song.
And so I stayed active from mid-1970 to 74, doing things like that, and just production and studio work, doing a lot of commercials. I actually worked for Steve Binder, who produced Elvis's comeback television special.
Oh, okay.
With the black leather suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I worked for him and Steve Allen at the time. And doing the Troubadour and some of the smaller venues there in Hollywood, the Ash Grove, the Whiskey, with not the God's Children, but the WAG. It was a pen called the WAG, which were my initials, William Anthony Garcia.
Just one quick clarification there. Little Ray that you mentioned, now he would have been the guy that did Karen on the Faro label, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And he also had There's Something on Your Mind, the Big J. McNeely on Dory.
Okay, yeah.
He actually recorded I Have Nothing. Just a tremendous talent, man. Tremendous showman.
So, Little Willie, you were in Malo in 1974. Tell me then what happened from there.
Oh, it was great. I did an album with them called Ascension, which not only in my opinion, but others, was one of their greatest works, I believe. And I toured with them for a little over a year with Tower of Power and the Temptations, Harry Chapin. And we just didn't get the hit. So, keeping a band of that size, I think we were, boy, pretty much a 12-piece band with a road crew. You know, not getting a hit, it was pretty hard to keep the band together. And I moved back to Los Angeles and discovered that while I was touring with them, I had developed quite a serious drug problem. And I came back home and pretty much bummed around L.A., living off my reputation for the following 4 years. It's about 1976 when I came back home. Was just going downhill fast, addicted to cocaine and heroin and alcohol. If it hadn't have been for a dear friend of mine, Tony Garcia, who played in the Midnighters, and I went to high school with him as well, he came and sought me out, invited me to come and hear a band he was working with, and I agreed and ended up at a Christian broadcasting network in Tustin, California, and was exposed to the gospel of Jesus Christ, and committed my life to the Lord March 16th, 1980.
What are you doing now? I mean, I think I read where you had a ministry going, but I suspect it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, I still do selective shows with the Midnighters, the Greek Theater, the House of Blues, and the Latin Legends tours with Malo and Tierra. But our ministry, we kind of focus our attention on youth at risk and families in need, and it's Willie G Ministries, and we've been pretty active now for the last 21 years here in the greater Los Angeles area. We have a food bank, after-school music workshops, and a number of things that we do. We do some high-end events throughout the year, and one of them is health fairs, where we work with the supervisors of our L.A. County, the 4th District here in the 1st District. And we make sure that people's needs, they have real physical needs, and we try to address that. And in so doing, we find that they're very open to the gospel. I know what it did for me, and no one could ever convince me that there wasn't a God or that Jesus Christ wasn't a real person, because I experienced a miracle touch from him a little over 26 years ago, and he removed from me the desire to ever want to do drugs again, which was something that a lot of the other programs, well-intentioned as they were, didn't do. I mean, they helped me, but there was always this craving to go back to it. And March 16th, 1980, when I submitted to the gospel, and may I say, Brian, I really believe that no one's ever the same after they've been exposed to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because the word is alive, it's powerful. It's sharper than any two-edged sword. It penetrates to the division of the soul, the spirit, the joints, and the marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. And that's to say that God knows what's racing through our minds. He knows the burden that we carry in our heart. He's understands our confusion, our pain, and yet there's a willingness on the part of our Creator to enter into the human condition, into the human situation, and transform it forever. And all I did was taste and see. March 16th, 1980, I said, God, if you're real, if what they're saying about Jesus is true, then do it for me. And I didn't even know I was praying, Brian. But God understands the cry of our heart. And so consequently, we've been blessed to be able to take that same message of hope to communities around the world, cities around the world, through our ministry. And it's an amazing thing.
Little Willie, is there anything that you'd like to say in addition that I may have missed through the interview?
Yeah, let me just say this, that to our listening audience out there, I want to say thank you to the people that have supported our efforts through music throughout the years. If it wasn't for the fans and the people that come and see us at our concerts, you know, we'd pretty much be hermits.
Well, Little Willie G, I sure appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with me tonight.
Not a problem, Brian. Thank you so much for thinking about me. Let's do it again. There's still so much more. Maybe we can get together sometime in person. I can come to the studio and bring a collection of some of my favorite music, and we can talk about some of the people that have not only influenced me, but have been a part of my life throughout the years.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that maybe we didn't cover. I mean, the whole Tejano movement of recording artists in East Los Angeles is just amazing. The Jaguars, Rene and Ray, Little Julian Herrera, Chan Romero. I mean, we could go on for hours, so I'm just really grateful for the time that you've given me. And if you ever do make it up this way, please get in contact with me.
I definitely will.
Because we can definitely do something on the air. No problem there.
Wonderful, Brian.
Thanks again, and I sure appreciate you taking the time.
Okay, my friend. God bless you.